This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Welcome back to TSN 1050. This is Overdrive. I'm Matthew Cause, filling in for Brian Hayes. And over there is Derek Taylor, filling in for two ex-NHL players. How you doing, buddy?
Good. Is this song talking about intercourse? What's this song about?
I think it is. It's about lovemaking.
What I got, you got to get it. Well, you got to give it to your mama is really... I don't know if I want... No.
Do you actually want to pull up the lyrics to this song and break down the lyrics to this song?
I think that is great radio.
I think it is.
Can we put on our rock voices and do it? Our, you know, if our names were Shadow or Midnight.
All right, hold on.
Midnight in the morning on Rock 107.
What I've got, you've got to give it to your mama.
Okay.
Huh? What I've got, you've got to give it to your papa. I don't like the song at all.
Share and share alike.
What I've got, you've got to give it to your daughter. There's a lot of range here.
Wow.
You do a little dance, and then you drink a little water. Okay, let's just say this right now. We're going to do a little baseball, and by the way, Sean Green's going to join us in a couple minutes. What the bleep are these lyrics? I mean, this makes no sense at all. What is the Red Hot Chili Peppers singing here?
Well, intergenerational love, I think, is what's top of mind.
Oh.
But that said, it may make no sense, and as you keep reading through it, it may make absolutely no sense. It's a hell of a song.
It's a great song.
Oh,
just don't read. The lyrics are dumb.
Like, it's like Snow Informer. I don't know what he's singing, but I will fake rap along with Snow Informer for the rest of my life.
Technical producer Mark Mullen, you've got two jobs. One is to get ready with the Spanish home run call, but also if we do have Informer by Snow, if we are allowed to play that song somewhere throughout the show, we should do it. Here is from the Home Run Derby yesterday, won by baseball's biggest star, Aaron Judge. Here is a random Spanish call.
Sólido y en dirección hacia el jardín central, Aaron Judge! A lo profundo! Y no! Díganle que no es a pelota!
Dígame que es pelota!
Couple thoughts.
Awesome.
If I ever get married, I want that guy to be my MC.
No!
I want that guy to be calling out when one of my buddies gives a drunk speech and then just does this.
No!
And then in the honeymoon suite at the end of the night, I want him to say this.
No!
So then you are committed to marrying a woman with an O sound in her name, right? Because that's the one they play on.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Matt Cause and...
No.
Mrs. Joe, whoa, Cause.
No.
There you go.
Is the open bar open yet?
No.
What do you mean I got a gift card from Subway?
No.
We love that, yet savagely rip on Chris Berman. That seems inconsistent. Maybe it's because it's so rare we get to hear that. We don't hear a lot of the Argentinian soccer goal calls. So.
No!
That's awesome.
All right, we'll get back to this just insufferableness from us in a second. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline is former Blue Jay and MLB All-Star Sean Green, one of my favorite guys to ever talk to. Sean, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Sean,
you got to ask him.
Oh, I'm getting it.
Okay, you got to ask him.
Well, first, Sean, we might have brought this up in the past, and you were an all-star. You had a fantastic career, but do you feel bad about the fact that I picked your name out of a hat in 1999 at the Home Run Derby? $10 was thrown in per person, and you beat Sammy Sosa, but you didn't really get that far in it. Do you feel bad that you cost me $10?
I was it 10 Canadian or 10 US?
Very, it was 10 Canadian, so about $7.28 American.
Okay, I don't feel quite as bad. That's a nice difference, but yeah, no, that was a that was a fun experience. It really was. It was definitely the scariest thing I had done at the time. But I like the format now much better than the format that we have.
With just the clock and where it's a race against time a little more than a guy gets 10 pitches?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And the thing that there are some challenges there. It's like we didn't have a cage to warm up in because it was inside the monster. So that was stressful. Not only did I have to follow, I think I was sandwiched between McGuire and Sosa, you know, about 8 months after they broke the home run records and all that, the big 98 season. So that was a little stressful, but then to add to it, we couldn't warm up. So basically BP ended about three or four hours before, and it's like, okay, go. And there's no warm up swings or anything. So that was kind of the other big challenge. So the goal was just to hit, I wanted to make the next round. Goal was to hit a couple. I hit two, and then I would have made it to the next round, but Griffey hit a home run on his 10th out. He hit a home run to get to three, and that knocked me out. And then I think Griffey might have gone on to win it if I'm not mistaken.
So you were in the competition with Mark McGuire. Was McGuire in that competition any different than, say, Aaron Judge was last night or Stanton was last night?
I mean, McGuire is very similar. I mean, I don't think there's anyone who's ever lived who can hit the ball harder and further in a home run derby than McGuire. But if there's anyone that's anywhere close, I think it would be Judge for sure. And Stanton as well. But I mean, Bonds hit the ball a long way, but I don't know if you guys remember I think it was 98. Yeah, it must've been 98 because we had Canseco and we came up for two spring training games against the Cardinals, prior to the big, 70 home run season for McGuire. And there was a home run derby at Sky Dome, which was called at the time, and McGuire and Canseco were just putting on a ridiculous show of pinballs, high up and off the hotel rooms, and it was pretty fun to watch. So, I've seen it firsthand, and those two guys can put on a show with the best of them. But Judge and Stanton are this generation's version.
If you had to guess, or if you know, the longest dinger you ever socked would have been how long?
I don't know how far. I know I hit one in the fifth deck in Sky Dome. So I think that was probably the farthest. Batting practice, yeah, I mean, I hit a couple into the restaurants in center field. Carlos and I did that a couple times during batting practice. But I don't know. They didn't really measure them too much. But, BP, we were trying to hit them as far as we could. So Sky Dome, Rogers Center has probably the best targets in baseball because you can hit the face of the windows. We always went for the Jumbotron, but never got it.
That was very cocky of you, very optimistic. Joined by Sean Green here on Overdrive. Sean, what I like about having you on is you're always good for stories. And before we get, I want to talk about what you were doing in London. You were participating in the All-Star Derby there.
I'm sorry? The All-Star?
Okay, let's get this one thing out of the way.
Let's do that.
Do you call it the All-Star Derby or the All-Star Derby?
Derby.
Thank
but
you.
When you were in London, did they call it the Derby or the Derby?
Because I honestly would try to side with one of you, but I didn't hear anyone say Derby or Derby.
Okay, well you sided with me already. Thank you, I appreciate that, Sean.
I object. Your Honor.
Sean, in the Blue Jays final game before the All-Star break, they lost 19-1. And what I'm curious about is, what is that like in the dugout? I did a little research. When you were with the Diamondbacks back in 2005, on May 8th, you guys lost 16-2 to Pittsburgh. Then a mere 5 days later, on Friday the 13th, you lost 18-3 to Colorado. And I don't really care about going back and looking at why you guys won or lost. What I'm curious about, what is the dugout like in the eighth inning of those games?
Yeah, I mean, those games, I mean, even when you're on the winning side of it, it's, I think everyone sort of is ready for the game to end. It's, a lot more fun when you're on the winning side. And I've been on the winning side of those games, though, and been the one guy who made all the outs. And people come to you and say, oh, someone had to make the outs today. We scored 15 runs, but I was 0-for-6. So I've been on that side of it, too. But it's tough. I mean, I think for the... So for a bounce back for the next day, I think you'd rather get beaten up like that than lose, 4-3 in the 13th inning. And, think about all the mistakes that cost the team the game that were made throughout. I think those are tougher to bounce back than, when your pitcher just doesn't have it and gets a bunch of runs. it's, you know, you see that in the playoffs as well. It's those tough, close games that are harder to bounce back.
Sean, Cause here is trying to tell me that Aaron Judge is the next greatest thing since sliced bread, and I've been trying to think of other players who have been the next greatest thing. When you look at Aaron Judge, what do you see?
I mean, he's a physical specimen, amazing. What kind of blew me away watching the Home Run Derby is his swing is, he has a pretty short swing for such a big guy, and it's a little bit more of an uppercut, where usually guys who drive the ball like he can to the opposite field have, they create a little more backspin with sort of a kind of a down and through the ball type approach. So he was hitting balls that I thought were, you know, pop-ups to short right field that were going in the, you know, the second deck. So that's what blew me away. And if he can, you know, maintain that short swing and still drive the ball that far off the field, then, you know, it's going to be pretty scary to see the numbers that he puts up.
While we're talking about swings, I was on SportsCenter on Saturday, and we were calling L.A. Dodger highlights. And if you've had those moments where you look at it and go, oh, I literally was watching this and went, oh, that's Sean Green. But, you know, it's like for 1/10 of a second, because you realize it can't possibly be Sean Green at the dish. It was Cody Bellinger. Am I bonkers? Like, is it just, or am I just thinking all lefties would look the same?
Yeah, maybe it's a little bit of ball. I'm flattered. I mean, he's definitely way ahead of I was. I mean, he's I think just turning 22 or is still 21. I'm not sure, but I was still in AAA, and to be able to do what he's doing, staying poised, having all this spotlight on him, is extremely impressive. I mean, he's got almost the same body style as me, and that being said, as a left-hand hitter, it looks pretty similar. He swings hard. I swung the bat really hard as well, especially after my first few years when I started figuring out that I wanted to try to drive the ball to center field and see if I can use the bigger parts of the park to hit home runs. And he does that. He came right up swinging hard, and you know, he's got an incredible future. I think last year people were saying Seager, and I always thought Seager looked a little bit more like Olerud. He's got more of a kind of left center over the shortstop's head line drive, kind of gap to gap type approach. And you know, either one, any of those guys to get compared to is definitely flattering for me.
Hopefully, at least with the Olerud comparison, at least a better helmet. Joined by Sean Green here on TSN 1050. Sean, the Blue Jays, for them to reach 88, 89 wins is going to require them to have basically a 640 winning percentage, which only the Dodgers in Houston have right now. And what I'm curious about is the season is long, and especially during a lot of years you were playing, there was no wild card or second wild card. How tough is it, especially for a veteran, when you're playing a season, and I know you got to be professional, but when you're grinding day in and day out and you know the chances of making the playoffs are near statistically impossible?
I mean, it is tough. I mean, my first few years with the Jays, we 95 through 97, we were kind of in that similar boat for the most part, and it's tough when you have someone in your division like Houston or LA that's just completely running away with it, which we had a lot in my years with the Yankees, and even early on in Baltimore was pretty tough, and the Red Sox as well. But when someone's running away from the division, I think it's a little tougher. When with that second wild card, I think it gives everybody hope. And the thing about baseball though is everyone also, as much as you want to win and worry about that, you also have your own career. So you want to make sure you're performing and doing the things that you need to do on an individual basis. So that's I think it's a little different than if you're, you know, a lineman in a football team or something, where, you know, there's really not as much of the statistical component to your future. So it's always so much more fun to come to the park when you're winning and when you know you have a shot coming into the trade deadline to add to your team and try to get deep into September and the postseason. But you know, I wouldn't count the Jays out yet. It's been a tough first half, but you know, they've gotten extremely hot in the past, in the second half of the season. And I think, if they could kind of get their starting pitching, you know, on track and some of the lineup could start, you know, the power's there, I think, for the most part, but it's get on base a little bit more, I think some good things could happen in the second half.
Sean, you did 5 seasons with the Dodgers. I want to know any Vin Scully. Anything about Vin Scully you can tell me. I didn't hear near enough of him, and then all of a sudden he was, well, all of a sudden,
what
40
mean, all
years
of a sudden?
Later. He was gone
he did it
40
for like
years
60
later.
60 years.
My entire lifetime he was a broadcaster.
All of a sudden.
Give me anything you can about Vin Scully.
I mean, Vin was an incredible storyteller. I mean, he actually had an impact on one of my traditions when I came over. I'd just been with the team. It was probably a couple weeks into April, and I was on deck one day, and I looked down my batting gloves. One of my batting gloves was ripped, and so I didn't have time to go get a new pair of batting gloves before going to the plate. So I went up there, I hit a home run, and when I got to the dugout, I threw my batting gloves into the crowd. And so on air, Ben said, oh, it must be something that, you know, the new guy from Toronto that he does when he hits a home run. He throws a pair of batting gloves to kids, and that's, you know, how great is that? He went through this big, long spiel, talked about it for an inning or so. And so I thought, oh, okay, well, Vince says this. I guess I better do it. So I started doing that, and it became something that was pretty cool. It was a nice connection point with the younger fans. And so every time I hit a home run, the first couple of times I'd forget, and the guy working in the clubhouse come out with a new pair of batting gloves and tell me, oh, make sure you go throw them in the crowd. And from then on, I started to remember it. I always remembered, and I would throw them in the crowd, and the kids would come running down after a home run. So it was kind of cool. It all started with the legendary broadcaster making a simple observation.
They'll never be guys like that again. Like I just, those one man booths where guys just tell stories and know baseball and love baseball. I just, those may be gone, but I'll never forget them.
Yeah, he once told a story about Madison Bumgarner chopping a snake in half and rescuing a rabbit, and I mean, just a ridiculous story, one of the best. Before we let you go, Sean, I did want to at least touch on this. What was it like, the home run derby in London? How did it go? Just, you know, what was the reaction there? And will eventually the Tampa Bay Rays be relocating to England?
Right. Yeah, it was a blast. When they told us what they were going to do, it was like a 60-degree field instead of a 45. So it was actually on the stage where the concert was. So a couple nights before, Justin Bieber was performing. And so we were hitting basically where he was performing, and they had two separate mounds, platforms for the batting practice pitchers to throw off of, and the home plate rotated. So the field was so narrow that they wanted it to be to our pull side. So if a lefty was up, then the pitcher on one side would throw, and they'd rotate the plate and vice versa. And, you know, when they told us about it a couple nights before, we were saying, you know, this is kind of scary to see how this works. But everything was really well designed, really well thought out, and there's tons of people in there. It's, you know, Hyde Park, and it was, you know, the summer festival time, so there's people always milling about, and you know, I think only two people got hit with balls, so that's always a positive.
That's a win.
Well, two people got, when I say got hit, two people got injured, and there's probably, you know, close to 200 balls flying over, because the fence was really short. It was probably, at the furthest point, it was probably 320 feet. So it was really close, but we had a great time, and the turnout was above expectations, and then I think the engagement and viewership on social media was well above what they expected, and the goal is to just kind of start seeding baseball in the UK, and it's tougher than the other sports, North American sports, you know, basketball, football, and all that, because of, you know, the daily schedule, and you have the time change, and the stadiums there really aren't, they're really not wide enough in a lot of cases to try to host a team or host a series. So there are some challenges, but I'm pretty confident that within a couple of years, there's going to be a series played there just like the NFL does.
Sean, thank you so much for joining us. Did you do better, by the way, this time than in 99? Where'd you do better?
I did better, but there were some targets aside, so okay. It was all these extra bonus points and crazy rules. So yeah, I had 13 points, which tied Cliff Floyd, and he was able to advance the next round this time, just because he was the captain and they had a little rivalry going between him and Carlos Pena. But a kid who was a minor league kid who got released by the Dodgers recently, he won the whole thing, and he actually was pretty impressive. So we'll see what happens with him.
Sean, thank you so much for joining us. Been fantastic. And just, you know, send the $7.43 Canadian in the mail.
Yeah, checks in the mail, for sure.
Nice. Thanks so much.
All right, good.
That was Sean Green, who joined us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red tag days are now on with 0% financing and lease rates on the Toyota Corolla and RAV4. Visit MapleToyota.ca.
Can you and I come to an agreement?
Yeah.
When Stan Kroenke buys the Tampa Bay Rays and moves them to North London, and someone buys another baseball club and moves them, you know, Stan Kroenke, they would become Arsenal Baseball Club.
Yeah.
Someone moves one and they become Tottenham Hotspur Baseball Club. Can that be the North London Derby if it's not going to be the Home Run Derby?
Yeah.
The North London Baseball Derby?
That's fine.
Okay. But
over there, it's fine.
But you're not going with this Home Run Derby thing. I'm very disappointed. Yes.
Coming up next, we will get into what is on Derek Taylor's thumb.
Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I like you, boom, boom, bam. Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, start somewhere out of land. I like you, boom, boom, bam. Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I like you, boom, boom, bam.
Welcome back to TSN 1050. This is Overdrive. I'm Matt Cause. That's Derek Taylor. When I first heard this, I'm like, I lick your boom boom down. That sounded dirty to me. I have no idea what any of these lyrics by Snow means.
Do you think if we went to kissthisguy.com, we would find some great made-up lyrics for this?
I think so. By the way, a shout-out to TSN employee Kelsey Brady, and I'll tell you why in a second. But I have to ask you, Derek Taylor, before we get into Damari Carroll, what the hell is on your thumb?
My index finger of my left hand.
Or your index finger. What is that?
It is a rubber fingertip. Because I am, for whatever reason, unable to turn pages of paper without some sort of traction. And what's your go-to for traction when you got to turn
pages? I lick my finger.
Yeah, exactly. Now do that 100 times a show after you touched a communal keyboard. And you think, okay, now I have parvo. You know, I'm not doing that. So I go rubber fingertip.
All right, let's go around the room. Has anyone ever seen someone walking around with a rubber tip for their, not for ladies' pleasure, on his index finger? Mark Mullen, I'll start with you, technical producer. Have you ever seen anyone with the rubber thing on their index finger?
I have not. Literally only DT. I have heard this story before.
Pretty creepy.
I am not shocked today.
Is it cooler if I refer to it as a Jimmy hat? Does that make it cooler?
No.
No, not really.
Producer Stephanie Appolito on her final appearance producing here at TSN 1050 for a little while. Your thoughts?
The Jimmy hat sounds kinky, so no. The last time I saw that in use, no joke, was my grade one teacher.
Yeah.
She loved that thing.
Exactly.
Every storybook she would read was with that. Not since then.
Like, would you guys, if you guys had to, would you lick your finger right now? Because you're touching equipment that other people touch.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with that as well. We eat communal nachos or the bowl of nuts at a bar.
Matt eats food off the floor.
Eat food off the floor.
Yeah, that's totally different. That's 5-second rule. And nachos.
No, this is like 60.
You can't. You can't double dip, obviously. Yeah. But nachos. The newsroom is in SportsCenter.
It's
a communal newsroom.
Yeah.
And there are Lysol wipes everywhere, and some people are very religious about that.
Not me.
I'm crushing, a wrap while I'm writing scripts for SportsCenter. So my fingers are all over somebody else's fingerprints of schmutz, and so I can't bring myself to lick my finger 40 times a show on SportsCenter. So rubber fingertip for the win.
All right.
Hat for the win.
Yeah, since no one's ever seen that, I don't know if you get the win. By the way, I've so wanted to do this. Have you ever gone into the bathroom at a restaurant and the guy next to you, does whatever they're doing and they do not
pooping.
Wash?
It's called pooping.
Or urinating. Okay. One or une or deux. That's French for people that don't know.
Fancy.
And they don't wash their hands. I've always wanted to go to the table that they're sitting at and go, oh yeah, by the way, that guy there did not wash his hands. Enjoy your nachos.
Why would you want to do that to him?
I want to shame him. Make sure he doesn't do that again. Wash your hands.
It's not Poppy making the pizza for Jerry and his girlfriend afterward.
Would you want to know that you're at a table with four other people sharing a giant thing of nachos, and one person, a Russian roulette of disgusting, one of those people has not washed their hands? How'd you feel about that, buddy?
I thought you were talking about a rando. If it's a person I know, I'd be like, dude, aren't you going to wash your hands? Look, hey,
I am doing a rando. Someone I don't know, because I'm trying to save a table. Trying to save a table. The good of the many outweigh the good of the few. That was from Spock.
Different people have different approaches to germs. I was walking across Gerrard Street with a Klondike bar in my hand, I dropped it on like the dividing line of Girard Street, just right around Dundas.
Yep.
I picked it up, peeled the chocolate off, and ate it. Like, we all have different approaches to
germs. I would have ate that well, but I want to give everyone a chance. Basically, what I'm saying is this. If you're in a bathroom with me, you wash your hands.
Do you think Fecal Fingers' family doesn't know that he doesn't wash his hands?
Man.
His wife knows. She's with him, but even in spite of that.
I wonder what the Christmas card picture looks like for the Fecal Fingers family. Damari Carroll, in an article from Ryan Wohlstadt from the Toronto Sun, talked about just how he wasn't happy with the way he was used in the offense, that basically he was just ISO guy.
Well, the team was ISO guys, right?
Yeah, the team was ISO guys. And in the quote, he talks about how a lot of guys don't trust each other, and a lot of guys, they didn't feel like other guys could produce or be given the opportunity. So there was a lot of lack of trust on our team. So that's what hardened us from going as far as they wanted. What hindered us from going as far as they wanted to go. Before my thoughts on what Damari Carroll said, your take.
He's absolutely correct. What's the frustration watching the Raptors?
ISO ball.
Late in the clock, ISO ball. DeMar dribbles to the elbow where he finds him, gets himself guarded as close as he possibly can, then shoots a fadeaway jumper.
Same thing with Kyle Lowry.
It's absolutely at least I can respect it a little bit more from the point guard. I don't know, maybe it's just because I like Kyle better than I like DeMar as a player.
Okay.
But I have some numbers to back up exactly what Carroll said. What's your take on Carroll?
Oh, well, first, he's right. The thing is a lot of people are going to hear that quote, and they're going to think sour grapes. And by the way, part of it is on Damari Carroll. You're a professional. If this is the role you have, you find a way to fit in. But you can be both. You can sound like a massive case of sour grapes, and he does, but he's also not wrong. This is an ISO-heavy team. So my basic message is don't dismiss the message because the messenger may seem a little bit like, oh, they kicked me out of town. Now I'm gonna say this and that.
Yeah, some guys are not shot creators, and that's the deal. Kyle Korver in Cleveland, not a shot creator.
Nope.
Every team in the NBA wants Kyle Korver on their team, though.
Yep.
Right. James Harden, ultimate shot creator. Russell Westbrook, shot creator. La la la. Some guys aren't. I was looking at some of these numbers because I wanted some numbers to see what Damari Carroll was talking about. 2-point field goals. The NBA breaks down everything into everything. It's fantastic.
Now do this for the dummies, and by that I mean I'm pointing to me when you explain these stats.
So they have players by how they got their 2-point field goals, for example. So
sure.
The percentage of 2-point field goals that were not assisted for Kyle and Damar. Kyle, 86% of his 2-point field goals did not have an assist on them.
That's crazy.
81% of DeMar's did not have an assist on them.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at that and go, well, that would seem to back up ISO ball. So I wanted to see, numbers don't mean anything in a vacuum. So Bradley Beal, 2-guard in Washington, 51% of his 2-point shots unassisted.
That means the other almost
more sharing
half
the ball.
Was more sharing the ball.
Andrew Wiggins, not a player the quality of DeMar, but still, I mean, a guy you can
up
throw
and coming.
In there. 59% unassisted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Much lower.
It's crazy.
CJ McCollum, 74. Again, much lower. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 58%. Much lower. Damari Carroll.
For pronouncing Giannis's last name.
Damari Carroll, for example, not shot creator, 2-point field goals not assisted, 41%. So that's, he needs, from those numbers, you could reasonably extrapolate.
Damari Carroll was right.
He needs someone to get him the ball, and if you're going ISO ball and we're not sharing the ball, you can't maximize me as a player. And for $60 million, you want to maximize $60 million.
Yes. Now, a couple thoughts. One, how much pressure does this put onto Dwayne Casey? Because it's a bit of a shot across the bow. How much pressure does it maybe put on Masai Ujiri? Because last year, when guys were open, they weren't hitting their shots. So maybe you say, hey, Lowry and DeRozan, they can't trust you. And there's other people out there that are going to say, why are you complaining about the offense? They won 48, 49, 50, I think 56 wins, high 40s last year with injuries. And here's my point on that. The regular season, you can get away with that. You can get away with ISO ball. The Raptors' offense, you know, was usually fourth, sixth in efficiency in the regular season.
Yeah.
Then in the playoffs, they would rank near the bottom. Last year, 13th out of 16 playoff teams. The year before that, when they won 56 games, 13th out of 16. This style of offense is fine in the regular season, but in the playoffs, it is death. So how much is this on Masai Ujiri? But how much of this is on Kyle Lowry to trust his teammates? And how much of this, and it's my last question, I'll let you go, how much of this is on DeMar DeRozan? And because I don't, like, DeMar DeRozan, I think maybe has more trust, but I don't know if DeMar DeRozan has the skill set to be a facilitator.
Kyle assisted on 30% of the basket, like on 30% of the baskets when he was on the court. So his assist rate was 30%. That's not bad. It's not. I think Westbrook was the leader at the mid 40s. So that was a phenomenal rate. So that's fallen a bit for Kyle. You wonder what that tells you. When you talk about these stats, does it tell you that these guys don't trust their teammates? Does it tell you that their teammates are not very good? And their perception of their teammates is, well, someone else isn't going to... DeMar gets the ball with 6 seconds on the clock. Well, I can't make two swings and hit Kojo in the backside corner.
Yeah.
Because that we just can't do that. So I'm guaranteed that Dwayne Casey knows all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Dwayne Casey's as frustrated as Raptor fans are about ISO, you know, ISO Joe.
How much change can he influence Lowry and DeRozan? Because this is what it all comes down to.
Better players. Like, you need better players. If CJ Miles can shoot 39% from three, this gets a little better.
Let's do a little chicken and egg, because you're right. And I threw this question out earlier in the day, and a lot of people were saying the same thing. Hey, why should the All-Stars trust the Pattersons and, you know, the Damari Carrolls of the world who didn't hit open shots?
You could say,
hey, the players weren't there. The other side is, a lot of players, and this is human nature, it's not the best, but it's human nature, when you don't get the ball, when the offense is 19 seconds of one guy touching it, and then maybe they throw it to the other guy, you've got three guys disengaged in the game. And I think that can have an impact on their ability to hit their shots. If everyone is moving, if everyone feels I have a chance to actually make a shot, you know, maybe they shoot better. But when you've got other three guys, they're just standing there going, oh, nothing's going to happen for me. Maybe I'll set a screen. So part of this goes on player quality, but part of this goes on Lowry and DeRozan. They're the stars. It goes on them to change their style, because you're not going to win in the playoffs with ISO style, because the numbers back that up.
Are you going to win with the 7 or 8 man rotation that they're going to throw out in the playoffs, though? Like, it, you have to have good teammates. So
yeah, but the playoffs, the all stars, the offensive efficiency for the Raptors in the playoffs stinks. And that starts with the coach, and that starts with Lowry and DeRozan.
It also starts with 7-game series against the same team, and one of them, you know, you're playing good basketball. What was it, Milwaukee in the first round? Like, you're playing good teams.
Yes, you are playing good teams, but you're 13th out of 16th. That says to me, and this is from a Raptors team in the regular season, great, much better offensive numbers, and teams that were winning 50 games, but yet come the playoffs, that style got exposed.
Now, is that offensive rating, or is that points per game you're talking about? Because those are totally different numbers.
No, it's rating. It's not points per
game. Okay, because offensive...
It's there. No, it's efficiency. Okay. This is accounting for pace of play.
Exactly, which in those West playoffs, right, they're just ripping up and down, and Houston popping 130. Guys have to make shots when they get shots. Did you
also have to feel like they're part of the team's game plan.
When you watched Patrick Patterson last year, did you think, yeah, he's going to make some shots?
No. I didn't.
And that's no, and we I wanted to believe we but, he would, right?
But yes, I didn't. But you know what I also noticed in so many of the playoff games last year, where with less than 2 minutes to go, only one of two guys would touch the ball.
Yep.
And you could see, I actually charted this. You'd be proud of me, because again, people go to TSN.ca, check out the details with Derek Taylor. I would count how many passes were made in the last 2 minutes.
Right.
And it was so predictable. So predictable.
Okay. Let's go back and count the number of teams for which that would be different, though. Golden State, four guys might touch the ball, but really probably three guys are going to touch the ball in the late stages of the game.
No, but the ball moves.
Durant, Curry, Clay.
No, the ball would move.
Houston was probably Harden by the end of it. Oklahoma City in its series.
And what happened to Houston?
Was Westbrook
flamed out?
Cleveland would have. I mean, LeBron. Cleveland has the golden situation, right? In that the superstar of superstars loves to share the ball.
Yes,
he gets it. But if he's got to go ISO Joe, he can rip you in half.
Yeah, but
most teams don't have the options they need. Like, this is not a team that has. For me, it's Kyle Lowry 1 and DeMar DeRozan 2. It's very clear that there's their best player and second best player. To me, a team with those two as 1 and 2. Isn't going to win a title.
Nope.
If they were 2 and 3, boom, shake the room.
But not as 1 and 2. Oh, no, absolutely. Part of this comes down to we know the inevitability of this is.
Yeah.
You know, we know what's happening. LeBron eventually stomps them. That's how this ends. All I'm saying is this is an interesting quote from Damari Carroll. He throws out the word trust a bunch. Yeah. And I wonder, you know, how different will this offense look next year?
Well, and he speaks to what's probably a situation in every locker room outside of Cleveland and Golden State.
Yeah.
And maybe San Antonio of there's them and there's us.
And that's what
they're running ISO.
Yeah.
And I'm not it's not like I'm Bruno Caboclo. I'm Damari Carroll.
Yeah.
I can hit threes. So let's work the ball around a little bit. Like when you play pickup at the gym, those guys are the worst.
I know, trust me.
Like if you're playing co-ed pickup at the gym and there's a guy on your team that just I'm not passing to the women. You're the worst. Share the ball we're all here to pick up ball at the gym is we're all here to have fun. Those guys are there, to your point, to have fun.
Like yes.
When I think of Jonas Valanciunas on offense, he touches the ball twice in the first 4 minutes and then never again. And I'm assuming very intentionally touches the ball twice in the first 4 minutes because they want him involved. And if you're not involved offensively, I don't blame you if your mind wanders defensively.
Josh Lewenberg will join us at 6 o'clock to get back into this. The Raptors offense, which seems more takeaway than or keep away than an actual legitimate offense come the playoffs. We get into the Blue Jays. That is Derek Taylor. I'm Matt Kauz. And if we have time, we've got to get the interesting tale about Marcus Stroman. You're listening to Overdrive right here on TSN 1050. Little known fact, back in high school, my nickname was M-Dog. This is TSN 1050. This is Overdrive. What? I am the M-Dog with Derek Taylor.
What? He's such an idiot here.
Shut up, Phil, you chubby little squirrel.
Is 5:47 the time where we lie? Is this the lying hour? Is that what's happening here?
What are you talking about?
M-Dog.
I was known as M-Dog when I was...
M-Dog Shyamalan?
That's right. When I was, winning football games as the MVP for the high school as the quarterback.
Snapping necks and cashing checks.
That's what I was doing, buddy.
Matt Kauz.
That's right. Exactly.
High school superstar.
Bam. You are fake news. Yeah.
What was the equivalent of wine for you back in high school? What was your particular fetish in high school?
Ooh, good question. I had super long hair. And I'm talking like way down in the front, way down past the, like a little bit past the neck, and in the back, you know, good way down the back. I had long hair. I was just a skid. I was just like, as a 16-year-old, it's remarkable I had girlfriends. Like, I would always wear my crappy Giants cap and my Phil Simms jersey and my long hair. Oof.
So you
not a good look.
You related to the music of Skid Row then back in the day.
Of course, it's funny.
18
I just listened,
in life and, yeah.
Yeah, but I just listened to mostly Rolling Stones. I was basically listening to Rolling Stones with long hair. That was 1992 Etobicoke. Why, what you look back then? What was your 17-year-old look?
17 years old, I played football. I played basketball. Yeah. I was the lead in a high school musical, West Side Story. Just the singing part, not the acting part, because the actor. I had all A's, and I was the top student in...
Mullen, cut his mic.
5 of my 6
you
classes.
You are fake news.
Yeah, exactly. Oddly enough, yeah, I think I had my first girlfriend, too. I'm still...
You are fake news.
I may be able to do math, but you know what? Math doesn't bring in the ladies.
That is very
true. And plus, being socially awkward doesn't bring in the ladies either. Or the gentleman, anybody.
You know what brings in the listeners and the love, especially on Twitter? Steve Simmons. Everyone loves Steve Simmons. I get tired on Twitter when everyone, especially the bloggers, all they do is write things about how much they love Double S. Here is Steve Simmons from The Morning Show talking about Marcus Stroman.
Marcus Stroman, how do I say this nicely, is a jerk. His whole persona of how he attacks his profession is me against the world. And it works for him. It's, I'm in a fight with everybody. I'm too short to pitch in the major leagues. Everybody's told me that from the day I was born. And therefore, it's adversarial how he approaches his entire career. So his approach to media, and we're the scum in the clubhouse to begin with. They don't want us there. Most players don't like you being there. Most put up with it and are professional about it. He has, for the most part, not been professional about it.
Here's my thought. First, everyone's going to side with Marcus Stroman because, in general, people don't like the media. And a lot of people don't like Steve Simmons. They'll hear that clip and go, oh, just the media, you know, complaining about their lot in life. Strowman is 100% wrong to treat other human beings with disrespect. Now, I guess I understand if that is the main way he thinks that he needs to be successful. That's his mindset. And especially in sports that is so hyper-competitive. The ends justify the means for Marcus Strowman, but the means stink.
What's your take on how Michael Jordan carried himself during his career?
Same way.
What's your take on how Larry Bird carried himself during his
career? Same way for all. This is not, let's beat up Marcus Strowman, but there is take away your people that are player apologists or people that hate the media. Put that aside. Shouldn't you treat other human beings with just a general level of decorum? Yes or no?
Yes.
Perfect.
And I will add to that and say, if you're riding the subway, mm-hmm. and someone next to you will not stop talking to you, invading your space, smells kind of weird.
I think the subway analogy is different than the locker room.
And likes to flick your nose.
Yes, no, that
would... treat that person with the same respect you would me?
Absolutely not. And I'm glad that you believe that analogy is the exact same thing of what it's like to be in a locker room.
It's because analogy means identical. Exactly. Well played. It's... to some people, the media is a bother.
And that's fine.
And I hate where the relationship has gone, because that if you can't go in the locker room and we're going to hide from you in the locker room, we're not going to talk to you, that's super frustrating, because some people in the media don't just want to smear poop all over you. We would love to... I go at it with I would love to learn more about your game.
Yes.
Because you are the holder of an incredible amount of knowledge that we would all like to have. So, and I don't really want to jam you up and trick you and put you into a corner and set you up to zing you, because
and by the way, most don't. And
the ones who do kind of ruin it for everybody else.
Of course,
be they media, be they blogger, be they
whoever.
Twitter, whoever.
Yes. Here's the thing, and we got to go. But you know, I got a thick skin. None of it bothers me. Anyone rips me, that's fine. My basic idea is, and I get why people don't like Steve, but. For Marcus Strowman, or just any athletes, not just about him, just you know, treat everyone with common decency as best you can.
Marcus got to care about Marcus, though. Whatever gets Marcus the best on the fifth day.
The ends justify the means. Marcus. It doesn't mean I have to like those means. More coming up next. We're on TV, and Derek Taylor looks fantastic. You are listening to Overdrive right here on TSN 1050.